Essay 12. I wish I could say otherwise, but I am not the forgiving type. An affront to me is one thing. Maybe I can get past that. Maybe. An affront to one I love? Well, no, I can't. At least not if you look at my historical record. I struggle with all of this on a daily basis. As I've explained, I felt let down in the aftermath of Carol's death. After about 6 weeks, I became very sad. Dangerously sad, I began to think. I say sad rather than depressed, because that feeling would build and build through the workday, press down on me during that evening alone at home, scare me. But if I had a day off, it would gradually lift, be almost gone by the time I went back to work again. I was sitting on the couch one night, distressed, baffled by the fact that so few people took note of this loss, said something consolatory. Just then, I heard a voice in my ear, soft, sweet, very kind, almost musical, so I knew it was Carol. All she said was, "You know, Paul, you can't make people care about you when they don't." That was my answer. Immediately I felt better, much better. Like Occam's razor, it explained everything. I think I may have laughed out loud, or maybe it was just in my head. When you're alone long enough, it can be hard to tell the difference. As T.S. Eliot reminds us, not all worlds end with a bang. Some end with a whimper, or, more accurately, a long series of whimpers, each so subtle, barely audible, we don't take notice. A process we can remain blithely unaware of for years, even facilitate through this inattention. We all carry a headful of these dead worlds, dark cinders where light once shone, believing blissfully that what once was there still is. That sentence reminded me of some lines from a poem I wrote well over 40 years ago, one I had completely forgotten and just went to find, in which a similar image works to capture this temporal illusion. A million years ago, a star died, yet careful astronomers still measure its faint light nightly. But then, in a blinding flash of a supernova in the neighborhood, some of those cinders become suddenly visible for what they are rather than what they were. Like this one, my workplace world. Sad is a natural reaction to a realization of that sort. Just not a good one, for me at least, right then. I know enough about my own psychological dynamics to know that for me, as for many people, the way out of sad, which I both don't like and fear, is mad. So I got mad, very mad. Not angry, mad. Anger, to me, is a response to an immediate singular stimulus. It may last a long time, but it's local. I was very angry about Carol's death. Not mad, at her or at anybody. Angry. Mad is broad, unfocused, more an attitude than a state of mind. I just preferred to be mad instead of sad, so I was. My actual loss was exponentially more consequential than the sum of all the perceived slights that I felt in its aftermath. Times a million. Even in my rattled state, I knew that. So why was I so mad? Because I think now I felt on some level as if every one of those minuscule affronts was directed not to me, but to Carol. Each a little way of saying, "I don't care enough about her to say anything to you to acknowledge her passing." And maybe not even her passing, her life, that lovely brightness I had known. I don't like being mad either. I don't really fear it, like I do sad, because I understand enough about myself to know I won't act on it in any way that is very damaging, except maybe with some words, the occasional rant and sardonic irony I mentioned in the essay I wrote last spring. But I just don't like it in the general scheme of my emotional economy. Carol had a favorite quote she had tacked up, speaking directly to this, attributed variously to many people across history, including the Buddha. "Holding onto anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die." It's even more true of mad. It's self-ingested poison. My way out of mad is to make decisions. Last summer, I sat down, inventoried everything, and made decisions. Hard, firm decisions. In or out, all around, done. I have a very disciplined mind when it comes to living out my decisions. If I say, even if only to myself, this is what I'm going to do, I've thought it out and decided, well, I do it. Crisply, easily, because there is no longer any emotion involved, no up and down, here and gone. Just like the love Carol and I have for our kids. Principled, promissory by definition. I made many promises last summer to myself, and I've been keeping them, no problem, for months now. I had a sense this morning that I might need to start toning it down, make it less fierce. I don't even know what that means or might involve. It's not a going back, a saying I was wrong, etc. I wasn't. It's just that now I need to move all of this work into the category of autonomic behavior, not think about it so much. Trust that the work is done and will not need to be redone. Move on. Maybe this is pertinent, ultimately, to my relationship with God, which, as I said, is not a particularly good one now, a fact that has been on my mind more lately. I am pissed at him and all his minions. Yes, just that, pissed. I am by birthright and long indoctrination a Roman Catholic, the Harley of Christian sects, and the Irish version of it, via my mother, an O'Neill by way of the McAvoys. So I had some dark humor to sweeten the taste of it growing up. The Christian God is, of course, supposed to be loving. That's the whole deal with the Good News and the New Covenant, not that Old Testament, my way or the highway God, who would, for example, turn Lot's wife into a pile of salt just for looking back at her lost home. That God has anger management problems. When I hear people throwing around selected hits from the Bible to justify their current biases, I think exactly what I often think when I read or listen to some academic arguments. Hello? Have you actually read the book? The God I feel like I'm dealing with now is this throwback version. Scary. Like those bumblebee uniforms the Steelers break out every now and then. When my son was in the fourth grade, one of his classmates started tormenting him, often with some violence, throwing rocks, things like that. We were invited to this other boy's parents' house for some sort of school event. Carol approached his mother to ask her to intervene, assuming that would just take care of it. Surprisingly, she said she knew exactly what her son was doing and had no intention of trying to stop it. Carol asked, "Well, can you at least tell me why he's acting that way?" To which she responded, "Because he can." Joe was attending a school run by Reform Presbyterians, a sect we had little first-hand experience with. Carol had been raised kind of in a Presbyterian church, but in one of its iterations, and in a family that was more like, stop by church every now and then and try to be nice. The mother's response told us everything we needed to know about the culture of the school we had gotten ourselves and our kids hooked into. They believed that they were already saved, incontrovertibly. It was somehow written in the book. For a Catholic, that's lunacy and cheating. Joe, being Catholic, was not saved, and given the bookness of all this, never could be. Same for me and Carol and Bridget. This God-endowed power allowed them to do what they wanted, because they can. They should have put that on the school shield. Why? Because we can. Carol and I were stunned and pissed, and I used that word in the same way I used it above. So over dinner that night, we had a conversation with Joe about how to fight back, something I learned a lot about growing up. Carol seconded my suggestions. Joe listened quietly. Then he said the most stunning thing I have ever heard anyone say to me. Remember, he's 9 years old. He said, "I think that's wrong. If I do those things, I'm sinking to his level and going against my own values and principles. That's not how I want to live. I have other ways to solve this problem. They will take time, but in the end, I will win, and I will get to keep my integrity." We were both drop-jawed, stopped talking, said we were sorry for trying to induce this inappropriate behavior, how we admired him for what he said. I know I had tears about to emerge from my eyes, so moved was I by the innate goodness of what he said, though I don't think he saw them. It is the single most godly thing I have experienced in my life. Cho did win that war with that young man quickly and in a surprising way that is, in itself, too long a story to tell here. But I'm glad I remembered all this. Maybe I can continue the arduous process of working my way back from mad by aspiring to be more like Joe. Today is, by happenstance, daylight savings time. I have an extra hour. Might as well put that time to good use. Make a start. Forgive somebody for something, anything. Because I can.